Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The Burt Show.
For the second time, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is headed to Philadelphia. Eagles fly in Super Bowl. Are Super Bowl champions for the second time, 40-22. They take down the Chiefs.
Wah, wah.
It was a beatdown last night.
Wah, wah. I don't know when it was. I don't know what decade it was that it seemed like every single year the Super Bowl was a big old nothing burger. Like one team was getting blown out. And then I feel like in recent years it's been pretty close. Last year, I mean, last night I just lost interest. I mean, I turned that thing off in the middle of the fourth.
I made it. I didn't even make it to the fourth. I made it halfway through the third, and I'd had enough.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I was thinking about you most of the time.
Yeah. I was going through it.
Why was that a big one for you there, Mo?
I didn't even want to bet on the Super Bowl. I feel like it was forced on me, but there I was. I'll reset it if you missed it. I was in a playoff draw for the NFL, and it was like a March Madness-style tournament. And I happened to pick all of the right teams. The only one I didn't get right was the one in the end, which was the Kansas City Chiefs. So the guy that I was playing against in the finals chose the Eagles. I chose the Chiefs. And whoever won was going to get a $5,000 pot off of a $50 buy-in. And he came to me and offered me a split half a week before the Super Bowl. And I could have sent him $2,500. He gave me $2,500. We call it a day. Boy, did that seem like the right thing to do looking back now.
Well, I tried telling you.
Yeah.
Anybody I told leading up to the game about your bet is like, oh, I would have taken that $2,500. I know.
And I was right there, man. It seemed like the right thing to do. I felt like it was the right thing to do, but I got that text from my grandmother. And everybody was in my DM saying, I know you blame your grandmother. I'm like, no, I don't. I don't blame my grandmother. It was my decision to make. She did inspire me. She did inspire me to go big or go home. Yep. I went big. Now I'm going home.
Nope.
With nothing. Mm. A big old nothing. That was... I wish I just honestly, first of all, let me say this. My friends, my family, the Burt Show listening community, like they never come out to support me the way they do when I'm down bad. When I am in pain, man, my phone was blowing up this morning like I played in the Super Bowl.
At what point during the game did you go, oh, this is it. This is done.
I think it was Pat Mahomes' first interception. It just looked like momentum is such a big deal in an NFL game, and it just felt like Philly had the momentum from the very beginning, and I saw nothing in Kansas City that said they could turn it around.
Philly played good. Kansas City did not.
No. When it was 17-0, I'm like, I feel pretty good about this. Although then you got the Patrick Mahomes factor, and I don't know who was playing at quarterback last night for Kansas City, but it was not the Patrick Mahomes that I've been watching the last couple of years.
I don't know what that was about, man. I felt like he could turn it around in the second half, and then when they came out and was still flat, I was like, this is a wrap. If the NFL is cheating, then I don't know where they were last night, but we could have used it to make it a decent game at least.
Where are the conspiracy theorists today? They're like, oh, they had to have a blowout to reset this, to throw us off the scent.
So I asked my son was sitting in my lap when the Super Bowl started last night. And I'm like, all right, Jimmy, who you got? Kansas City Chiefs or Philadelphia Eagles? He's like, I don't know. I go, do you think the guys in red are going to win? Or you think the guys in green are going to win? He goes, guys in green.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah.
So I wish you would have told me that a week sooner.
I know. And funnily enough, when we were watching the Super Bowl, because I did watch it in its entirety last night, and you can call me crazy. I told my husband this, so I have evidence. The way John Hamm introduced the Kansas City Chiefs and the way Bradley Cooper introduced the Eagles, I was like, I think the Eagles are going to win.
Just based on that.
Merely based on the introductions, because John Hamm's voice cracked a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And then Bradley Cooper's holding a little kid. And if you know the history of like the Philadelphia Eagles kid, it's really, really sweet.
What is it?
So he was in a store and an influencer, I don't know who the dude is, approaches him. And he's like, $1,000 or like a surprise eagle or something like that. And the kid's decked in Eagles gear and he takes the eagle or right, whatever. And he starts talking to him and the kid had been, there's a children's hospital nearby. Mm-hmm. And the kid had been to the children's hospital, like he said 17 times. Okay. And the guy's like, do you mind me asking? And he has juvenile arthritis.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And is in a lot. He's like, are you in pain right now? And he's like, yeah, I'm at back or whatever. So he gives him two tickets to an Eagles game during the regular season, right? But then fast forward, the team gets it, hears about it or whatever, and they had him there on the floor of the Super Bowl, man.
Cool.
Bradley Cooper holding him. It was so cute.
That is super cool.
He did have a lot more swag when he brought the Eagles out.
Did he?
Yeah.
He was feeling it. Way better.
Yeah. I got to say, the Eagles are a passionate bunch because I didn't think there were this many Eagles fans down where we live because I went to Live at the Battery, which is like this big sports bar. I was like, this will be a fun place to watch the Super Bowl. We walk in. It might as well have just been a Philadelphia Eagles bar.
Yeah.
Everybody was decked out in green. Everyone had their beads on. When they were cheering, I was like, oh, the Eagles must have done something good. Whereas last year, I went to the same place. Everyone was cheering for the Chiefs. So I don't know if we just have like a bunch of bandwagoner fans, but people were pulling out for Philly yesterday.
Yeah, Philly fans are some of the most passionate in the country for any one of their teams right there. And the fact, I think, also that Kansas City has been there so many times, because maybe it was just the way I was watching the game. It felt like there were more Eagles fans inside the stadium also. And I think when you win so many Super Bowls, you know, you win two in a row as a fan, you get kind of complacent. It's happened here in Atlanta. The Braves were winning. And then people weren't even showing up to the playoffs because we're like, I've been here before. You know what? Get to Game 7 of the World Series, then we'll show up. But Philly fans wanted this so badly.
You know who was upset? Those Swifties. Because there was not a lot of Taylor Swift on that screen last night.
Yeah. Girl, I was bombed. Everyone was like, what team are you rooting for? I'm like, I'm team love. I'm like, I don't care if they win or lose. I just want a sweet little moment on the field with them. And we didn't even get that.
Nothing.
The Burt
Show. Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
Kendrick Lamar, he did what he needed to do. Last night's Super Bowl halftime show was so good. He brought out SZA, absolutely crushed it. And I was comparing the set list that you predicted on Friday versus what he actually performed. And it wasn't that far off. He started out with a freestyle and he did a lot of the songs that you mentioned, Mo, that he was going to do. He did Squabble Up, Humble, DNA, Euphoria. He brought out SZA for All the Stars. And of course, he did Not Like Us. And this specific Super Bowl halftime show, I think it's one of those things where you need to know the lore. And so I feel like everyone who listens to the show and they're up on the Drake and Kendrick beef, you knew what we were all waiting for. We were waiting to see if he was going to pull off that A minor line or not. But I felt like this entire Super Bowl halftime show was performance art. Like, it was so much more than just a show for people to watch. And I kind of knew that going into this. I'm like, this isn't going to be like a Prince or an Usher or a Beyonce. Like, I know the second I go home, I'm going to have to pull up like the footage from YouTube and start making notes so I know what he was trying to say, because there was so much symbolism in his performance that it really took a couple of times of me watching it to fully digest what he was trying to say.
I fully felt the exact same way last night. The only difference between you and me is you did the research, so you know what was going on that stage. But I think most of America, if you don't know about the beef or watching videos, because I was the same as you. As soon as I stopped watching, I'm like, there was a lot there that I don't think I understood. Yeah. The performance itself, I think, will be judged by mainstream America that is going to say today, like, it was okay. Unless you know what was going on stage.
It's one of those things where, like, if you know, you know, and you understand what a cultural moment this was. So he starts out his performance by bringing out Samuel L. Jackson dressed as Uncle Sam. So immediately from the moment, I was like, oh, this is about to be political. So he brings out Uncle Sam, and it was so meta because he's like, welcome to the great American game. And this is right in the middle of the Super Bowl, the great American game. And he opens up the stage. Kendrick is doing a freestyle. And at some point, they do like a drone shot to where you can see how the entire stage is set up. And I was noticing, I'm like, those kind of look like PlayStation controllers, like all the different parts of the set. There's like an X and then there's like a weird little circle. And I'm like, oh, this is supposed to represent like a video game, the great American game. Mm. And so Samuel L. Jackson ended up narrating the entire set list and kind of carried this theme along. And from what I picked up on it, and Mo, please feel free to like correct me, because this is performance art. So this is what I got from it. Mm-hmm. But the commentary that I felt like the entire show was trying to say was that this is how America tries to keep black artists in a specific box. Like, don't be too ghetto. Don't step out of line. And at one point, Samuel L. Jackson says, don't mess this up. And it's right before the moment that everybody wanted, which was Not Like Us from Kendrick Lamar. And there was this really funny moment where he acted like he was going to do it. And he teased Not Like Us. But then he was like, wait, let me wait a couple more seconds.
Ladies. Yes, I want to make a move. I want to perform their favorite song, but you know they love to sue. Yeah, that song. Oh, maybe I think about it. You know what? I slow it down. Say, ladies, do me this solid.
I am going to say on not even a superficial, the audio sounded fantastic last night. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the best. Yeah, I feel like years in past, we couldn't really hear like the artist or whatever, but I'm like, whoever took control of audio this year deserves a raise.
It was crispy. And then it was very clear when he finally did go to play Not Like Us, and then he grabs the mic and he looks directly at the camera and has this little smirk on his face that everybody has been talking. He goes, say, Drake. I hear you like I'm young. And then he goes into the rest of the song. And of course, he does the A minor line. He cuts out. He doesn't say pedophile. He doesn't say that. So maybe he'll skirt a lawsuit from Drake. But the entire stadium went wild when he said A minor and then kind of dropped it and let everyone else take control.
That was the moment.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I can understand why a lot of people felt like it was boring. I saw that a lot, but I just think he probably took a moment where you normally appeal to the masses and appeal to a certain specific group of people, but I definitely have to watch it like 3 times because I'm sure there's a lot I missed. I appreciated the colors and the symbolism and the way right and blue with the dancers, and then when they were separating to show how the country is divided, I caught that.
Didn't even pick up on that.
I caught that. Okay. That, the A minor chain, of course, was like the highlight of the night. That was, I felt like that was his way of letting you know I'm going to take my shots at Drake. I'm not hiding behind it. He looked directly at the camera when he called him out. I appreciated that. So I know that the Samuel L. Jackson part I thought was great, and he was, Abby, you nailed that. That's exactly what he was doing. So all of the symbolism in it on such a big stage, I felt like was exactly what Kendrick was going to do and what we expected from him. But if you don't know Kendrick and you don't know the situation, I also get why you don't get it.
And I don't think people, when I was at the bar, I don't think people understood like the symbolism of bringing Serena out when Serena was crip walking.
Serena gonna take every chance she get to get back at Drake. Boy, that was great.
Because she used to go out with him, right?
Yeah.
Their exes. And I saw somewhere online like he was like trying to, not stalking her, but he was just being way too like aggressive trying to get them to date again.
He was doing a lot publicly. He was also talking bad about her new relationship. He was being toxic in her life, so Kendrick saw that as a moment, and so did she.
Did I hear that Drake has a new album coming out also?
I didn't hear that, but you could be right. Okay. I don't know.
All right, the Super Bowl commercials never disappoint, and this year was no exception. I'm going to tell you what A-lister joined Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal for when their Harry Met Sally reunion came on your next E-Buzz and The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Everybody's talking about weight loss injections because the results are so dramatic. They work by lowering blood sugar and reducing appetite. So, what if you're looking to lose weight but not interested in painful weekly injections, especially when you hear about some of those intense side effects? That's why doctors created a weight loss supplement called Lean, and the results are remarkable. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to lower your blood sugar, burn fat by converting it into energy, and curb your appetite and cravings so you're not as hungry. But listen, Lean is not for the casual dieter with only a few pounds to lose. The doctors at Brickhouse Nutrition created Lean for frustrated dieters with 10 or more pounds to lose. Here is even better news. They're having a huge Memorial Day sale, and Lean is 25% off. Visit TakeLean.com and enter THANKYOU25 for 25% off. It's promo code THANKYOU25 at TakeLean.com.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
We're bringing in our dating expert, Nellie Soudry. She's got a podcast on Pioneer Podcasting Network called High Value Dating. So if you're taking a look at dating and it starts with all the dating apps, where do you even start? Hey, Nellie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing today?
Fabulous. Okay. Great to be back with you all.
Good to have you on. What are like the three biggest mistakes, do you think, that people make on their profiles? And can they be separated by gender?
Yeah, it's interesting. Hinge actually came out with a study. Some of the photos that perform the worst on dating apps, one of them being beach photos, do not perform well. Secondly, photos where you are in a crowd or you are in a group and someone can't pinpoint who you are, it's not going to do that well. And another photo that doesn't do that well either for men, if you're smiling with your teeth and you're looking directly at the camera, not sure why, but those tend to not do as well. They recommend looking away or having your smile, but not showing teeth.
Really?
I think because when you're smiling with teeth, maybe it just comes across less assertive and stoic. I imagine that's probably why. And then for women, it's actually the opposite. Smiling with your teeth and looking a little more candid, maybe like brushing your hair as you look into the distance, that tends to do better than if you have no teeth showing, probably because it makes you look more approachable and feminine. I'm not sure, but yeah, those are some interesting stats. Another photo that doesn't tend to do well on dating apps is photos with sunglasses on. They want to see your face. They want to see your eyes. If you're trying to attract a guy, they want to see your face and vice versa, right? Women want to see your face, guys. So
what are the things you suggest outside of pictures to change?
Dating apps are visual platforms. So it's hard to have a conversation about your profile without the photos, because the photos do play such a significant role. I am happy to share some tips that will enhance your match rate, but I will say, just as a general piece of advice to anyone really trying to get out of the dating game this year, I implore you to look into getting professional photos, because it really makes a world of a difference. Outside of that, though, dating apps offer filters a lot of the times. Use them. Also, for women in particular, I see so many women trying to date younger guys and looking for marriage. And it's not that you can't have that. I think you'll have a lot more leverage if you add 10 to 15 years on your age range as a woman. And as a guy, you know, again, like a lot of men are super visual when they're on the apps, but try to screen for compatibility. Look at the actual profile, look at the bio, and really make sure that you are being somewhat discerning about who you swipe on.
You know, we've heard for so many years that guys and toxic masculinity, women are looking for somebody that's in touch with their feelings, but then you come on and you're talking about the smile and looking stoic, and then you talk about professional pictures also, and filters. And to me, if I was looking for a woman, that's like the last thing I would be looking for. I'd be looking for something more authentic.
Well, she's not saying filters on the face. She's saying the filters in the app as far as like what religion you want, smoker, non-smoker, stuff like that.
Thank you for bringing that up. You absolutely want to avoid using filters. I have heard too many horror stories from my male clients who meet someone on a dating app and they feel catfished, and she shows up and she looks nothing like her photos because she has a Snapchat filter on or FaceApp. It's false advertising, and I think it's bad karma.
So let's say you want to do something crazy and you want to meet people face to face and you don't even want to use a dating app.
One of those ways is by taking it upon yourself to cultivate a community of good friends. Be the person that strikes up a conversation at your workout class. Be the type of person that gets involved in philanthropy or charity, because you're going to meet so many people through that are like-minded and ideally share similar values. And then when you get more involved in your community that way, or you make friends, you are going to start getting invited to more things. I've moved several times in my life, so I know how difficult this can be, but you have to take charge of your own journey and destiny to an extent by being the type of person who goes for what you want. Be the type of person who strikes up a friendship. Be like, hey, want to get coffee? Let's catch up. Be also the type of person that other people want to be around, and it'll happen a lot quicker. The key to making and maintaining friendships is adding value, just like anything else in life. Are you presenting yourself in a way that other people would want to be around you? I mean, I know it sounds shallow and superficial, but that is kind of how humans are wired. Are you also interested in other people? Think about the people you don't usually want to hang around. They're the people who are self-absorbed. And then you'll find that opportunities gradually start falling in your lap. And then what you can do is you can say to a friend, even if your friend is married, hey, if you know anyone, by the way, set me up. And then you're going to start to facilitate more connections that way too. I would say dating is kind of like investing. Diversification is key. So I would never put or advise anyone to put all their eggs in one bucket, being dating apps or going out in person. You could enlist a matchmaker, you know, if you're looking for a certain caliber and certain quality, like there are religious matchmakers. Telling friends to set you up is another option. Seeking out hobbies that you genuinely are interested in and that align with the kind of life that you're trying to manifest for yourself is another great way to meet people. They always say luck is where opportunity meets preparation. The preparation is you taking it upon yourself to put yourself in the right rooms and environments. The opportunity is making sure that when the right person does cross your path, you're emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and physically ready to seize the day. And then it's just a matter of time.
That's Nelly Soudry from High Value Dating.
Here's the thing. I'll actually share a little quick story if I can. Yesterday, I was slammed after my work day. Didn't want to go out. It gets super dark here. And so when 7 o'clock hits, I can't get myself out of bed sometimes. Hmm. My girlfriend called me up. She said, we have this Kabbalah thing that we registered for. I said, I don't want to go. Like, why would I want to go? Well, I ended up taking it upon myself to go because she pushed me to. There were like 200 people there. That's an example of an environment where you could meet someone. And I would never go to that, but I chose to get out of my house and do something new. So like part of it is also just taking risks, trying new things, pushing yourself. Whatever you don't want to do, if you're listening, do that thing.
Thanks, Nelly. Again, check out the podcast. It's High Value Dating. Have a great day.
Bye, guys.
The Burt Show.
Oh, you were up late last night watching that blowout of a Super Bowl, right? So this morning, a little tough to get out of bed. Maybe you need just one grain of motivation to go, okay, all right, I can take that first step out of bed. We call that Monday Mantra. And the one I brought in today is kind of a lesson that I've heard over and over and over again. Maybe it's because my age. The last couple of months. And it's from Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank, who again stresses that things come, things go. Don't get so stressed out because this too is going to pass.
The world is only going to end once. And if you're still awake the next morning, there's something good going to happen. Every single day in my life, every single day, I've got over 50 companies that I'm an investor in. I get a phone call in the morning or sometime where it's total catastrophe. They're being sued or something catastrophic has happened. And then an hour later, I get a call from somebody else saying, oh, we just got a takeout offer at 14 times EBITDA. You have to sign off on this. Do you want to sell? And I'm thinking to myself, the only thing you have to do between utter depression and euphoria is simply wait, because it's something else is going to happen. And so I live my life with a new attitude now. You know, I just simply cruise through the day knowing bad stuff's going to happen and great stuff's going to happen, and it happens every single day. And you kind of want to understand that that's the ebb and flow of how it all works, and it takes years to figure that out. I wish I understood that peace and harmony when I was 25. You get better with time because you don't let anything slow you down. In the end, you're dead. That's the only thing that's going to slow me down. And wherever I'm going, I'm going to start a business.
That's true for him. Yeah, it's really about survive and advance some days, man. It's just that sometimes the stress is so heavy and you're in it that you feel like this is going to be permanent. And nothing is permanent, right? The good stuff goes away. The bad stuff goes away. All you got to do is survive in advance.
It's so true what he said about just learning how to wait. Sometimes that period of waiting can be the hardest thing in the world, of just waiting it out. But sometimes that's all you can do is be still.
All right, Kristen, what do you got? Boundaries today.
Yeah, so I found this little nugget of audio from Leo Skeppy, and he is a famous TikToker, and somebody had stitched it, and I'm like, this person talking over, it's really annoying. I need to find the OG audio. And so I did digging, and so this is an oldie but a goodie, but it's talking about knowing your worth and setting your boundaries.
When you go to the club and they tell you it's $10 to get in, what do? You pay the $10 or you don't get in. Okay? The club doesn't give a f*** who you are. The cover is what it is, and if you don't pay it, you're not coming in. You're allowed to be the exact same way about what it takes to access you. Mm. If you tell someone, basic communication and consideration skills are my cover charge, they can pay it, or they can't come in. They don't get access to you. You're the bouncer at the door. You choose what you allow in your life and what you don't. So, set your cover charge. And it doesn't matter who's coming up to try and get in. You pay it or you off. Or being nice when it comes to your boundaries.
I love that.
I know, that's right?
Just the right amount of attitude, too, man. It makes sense.
So, I mean, we've heard this message before, but I don't feel like it was conveyed in this manner.
It really resonated.
And I'm like, yes, set your cover charge. And if they ain't got it, they can kick rocks.
Right.
It's really, honestly, that simple.
You know somebody in your life going to be like, but I'm on the list.
You got the list in front of you. No, you're not. I don't see it.
Everybody needs to turn into a bouncer today.
All right, our producer, Rebecca, here is going through a bag of emotions now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've been having a really hard time. I knew this break was going to be difficult for me to talk about, so I sent Katie some cartoon sounds just to, like, intersperse, just to, like, sort of make me feel better as I talk about it.
Have you thought about, like, not having a bad time?
Yeah. Mental illness cured.
You're done.
So, I've talked about having OCD before a little bit. I was, like, formally diagnosed when I was 19 years old. I had it for years before that as a teenager.
Well, give us examples of how that shows up on a day-to-day. OCD.
So OCD, it's really simple, but a lot of people think they understand it, but they don't. They're totally wrong. OCD is a disorder where a person has a brain chemistry problem where they are kind of inundated by intrusive thoughts. And those intrusive thoughts are so distressing that the person turns to compulsions in order to alleviate those distressing thoughts. And the more you do those compulsions, the more it becomes this sort of like feedback loop where you do it again and again and again.
Give me an example, like a real life example.
So one of like the most like mainstream stereotypical ideas of OCD is someone who has a germ contamination fear. They are afraid that like they have accidentally gotten a ton of germs on their hands, so they need to wash their hands. So a person with OCD who is afraid of germs will wash their hands multiple times a day. They'll wash their hands in a specific way. They'll do it for this long. Like, they will have to do that every time that they feel like they have contaminated their hands in some way.
And is that a real life example for you?
No, that's not for me. That's just like one of sort of like the most digestible, I think, ways to think about OCD.
It's real life for me.
Yeah.
That was me. I had contamination of OCD. I wouldn't let mail pass a certain spot in my house. If the kid's shirt or teddy bear hit the floor, I'd have to wash it immediately. And only I could wash it because there was a specific way that it had to be washed in order to hit my threshold of cleanliness. And then I got on medication.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was on medication. I was on medication for almost 10 years from like 19 to 28, I was on a very low dose of Prozac, and it was really only supposed to be a temporary boost for me when I was first given it by my doctor.
What was the tipping point for you that you're like, I can't live like this anymore?
I was in college, and I had just gotten a new obsession, and I couldn't leave my dorm room anymore. I couldn't leave. I was stuck. I couldn't tell my friends about it. I didn't know what was happening really at the time.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to take you
back.
It's
okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. It's always hard to talk about, but I am past it. And it was hard because OCD is so simple. All you have to do is stop doing the compulsions.
Yeah.
It's so easy. But when you know what you have to do and you still can't do it, that means that you need help and you need a boost. And I knew I needed that boost. And so that's why I started taking it. And for 10 years, I was just going on my merry way. And honestly, it really helped me a lot. So this past almost two years ago, May 2023, I came to a point where I realized, hey, I'm in a really good headspace. I feel like I've learned all the tools I need to be able to cope and deal with my mental health on my own. I'm going to go off and I'm going to see how I live my life without medication.
Not like go off on somebody, but just go off on the meds.
I was raw dogging life. And I was so proud of myself because I was able to do it and it felt so fulfilling. And I had a good grasp on my mental health. And I almost lasted 2 years. But recently, my OCD has come back at such a force that it feels as bad as it was before I ever got my formal diagnosis. It feels as bad as it was when I didn't even know that I had OCD. Katie, hit me.
Is that what your brain sounds like inside?
Literally what my brain sounds like. So I've talked about what OCD is for other people. For me personally, I have something colloquially called health OCD. All OCD is the same, but I think in layman's terms, you would call it health OCD. And with my medical record, if you know it, you probably have a good idea of what that means. So I have fun at work. I'm engaged. I'm having a good time. And then I go home and I clock into the OCD factory. Mm. That's what it feels like every day for me. My OCD has taken over my life at this point. I have compulsions that take hours of my day every day. Mm. And I've been fighting it and I'm trying to work so, so hard to go just one day without doing a compulsion. Because I have terrible, terrible reassurance seeking. And if you don't know what that is, it's a very common compulsion where people ask their family and friends kind of just the same questions over and over and over and over again. And I am doing that to my family and friends to where I am alienating my relationships. And it's always the same thing. You know, I'm asking my friends like medical questions that they don't know, you know, is this normal? Has this ever happened to you? Do you think this is okay? And it always just boils down to me asking, do you think I'm going to be okay? That's what I'm asking.
It's a prison.
It is.
And for those of you who don't know, it really is a prison inside your, and you can't escape because it's your own mind.
Yeah.
And you can't shut it off. And you might have a voice inside being like, this isn't real. Turn it off. And you can't. And you can never escape it.
What's the hesitation on going back on the meds?
You know, I never ever used to feel like ashamed about taking medication. I always felt like, you know, if you have diabetes, you take insulin. If you have a broken leg, you go and get it reset. I think the problem for me right now is I'm so frustrated and I'm so upset with myself because the last 2 years, what I went through when I battled cancer, I have been given a second chance at life. And I want so badly to wake up every day and feel so positive and so grateful for my life, because I think that should be the natural progression after everything I went through. And instead, I'm wasting it. Mm. I feel like I'm wasting it. And I'm so upset that I have to turn back to something that I felt like I could have moved past, and that I feel like I should be able to do this on my own. And I know I can't.
So you initially came on and you said, that OCD, your explanation of it was a chemical imbalance, right?
Yes.
So if it's a chemical imbalance and for 2 years you've been fairly successful at pushing it aside, is it a chemical imbalance or is there something that is sparking this OCD now? And if it is a chemical imbalance, then it seems to me that, at least in my mind, I would get back on it knowing that I can't do anything about that.
It is a chemical imbalance, and it, but the thing is, it's your behavior will lead it to progress or get better. Mm. So for me personally, if I was to take medication, I think temporarily, I would be able to then move forward with the cognitive behaviors that I need to do in order to stamp out the OCD.
So if you know that, then when are you starting again?
Mm-hmm. Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Find you some peace, girl. Right. Find you some peace.
I'm trying.
When I talk to people about getting on meds for the very first time, or when they take off and then they get back on it, generally when they have some space between those periods, they say the only thing I regret is I didn't take it sooner.
Yeah.
Like I fought myself and I fought my ego, and the only thing I regret is I didn't take it sooner.
Yeah. I'm excited to be medicated again.
It's a Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Everybody's talking about weight loss injections because the results are so dramatic. They work by lowering blood sugar and reducing appetite. So, what if you're looking to lose weight but not interested in painful weekly injections, especially when you hear about some of those intense side effects? That's why doctors created a weight loss supplement called Lean, and the results are remarkable. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to lower your blood sugar, burn fat by converting it into energy, and curb your appetite and cravings so you're not as hungry. But listen, Lean is not for the casual dieter with only a few pounds to lose. The doctors at Brickhouse Nutrition created Lean for frustrated dieters with 10 or more pounds to lose. Here is even better news. They're having a huge Memorial Day sale, and Lean is 25% off. Visit TakeLean.com and enter THANKYOU25 for 25% off. It's promo code THANKYOU25 at TakeLean.com.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You're going to notice something about around the office or where you go to work today. People are missing. They got the Super Bowl flu. Okay. Hey, where's Jenny today? Jenny's out. She's not feeling so great. She must have gave it to Billy because he's not here also. 22.6 million American workers planned to miss work today. 22.6 million.
Oof. They're all in Philadelphia.
Yeah, right. Another 16 million. Oh, that's up 16 million from last year. And on top of that, 12 and a half or almost 13 million employees. I've already planned to go and work late today.
I'm curious. They say 22.6 million American workers planned to miss work today. Uh-huh. Did they talk to all 22.6 million to decipher that they're going to plan to miss work today?
I wasn't in on the survey, but that's a lot of people. I know I saw it yesterday because I went to get a manicure and pedicure yesterday with my girlfriend. And the dude was complaining because so many people had called in. And he's like, it's because of the Super Bowl later on today. And that was like 2 o'clock. And he's like, I'm so sorry you guys are stuck in here. I'm like, well, you got 4 hours to kick off, so my feet aren't that jacked up. So we should make it.
No, I had a birthday party to attend yesterday, which is a bold move to do a birthday, kid's birthday party on Super Bowl Sunday.
Better get it done early, man.
It was done at 1. We were out at 2:30, man. Okay. That puppy was 90 minutes and we were bouncing. So kudos to them and happy birthday, Hendrix.
So on Saturday, I spent a ridiculous amount of time on social media because I was laid up all day on Saturday for something I'll get into later. But so all day, I'm pretty much just scrolling and scrolling and scrolling on TikTok. And all of a sudden, there was this surge of support for people saying that, look, if you block Instagram and Meta and Facebook on TikTok, that your algorithm is going to change. Did you guys see this at all this weekend?
No.
So I just happened, I guess, to be stuck in this algorithm and clicked on it a couple of times. So I saw it come up over and over and over again. And I told you guys, my TikTok compared to your TikTok and Instagram is so boring. You guys come in here with such great stories and great videos, and I'm into the biohacking algorithm, and some of mine is political, so it's just so boring that I've kind of lost interest in it. So I'm like, you know what? So many people are saying this, and you don't know what is real and what's not, so I'm at least going to try it. Change my algorithm. So I do. I block Instagram, I block Meta, and I block Facebook. And I think there was a political reason why maybe it started, maybe so Meta would lose some money or something like that. And so I wasn't even sure if it was real. So I did it, and it worked.
Wait, what?
It really did. It worked. Yeah, I started getting a whole bunch less of this similar type videos I was getting before. As soon as I blocked all three of those, I started getting all into a new algorithm.
Yeah, TikTok will just, it's not like some big conspiracy theory fix, because I've seen versions too where you have to also block certain people. So the list like changes, but basically once it sees that you block it, it'll align you. It'll say, okay, you don't want any content from these people or content that people who want to follow those people watch. So it's going to mess with your content. So the algorithm will adjust slightly to do that.
It did. Quite a bit.
So what are you getting now?
So now, this is really interesting. This is where I was going with this. It's the very first time that I've ever really been interested in TikTok. Because one of the first couple that came up was called a hashtag World Talk. Have you guys been on this at all? So if you hashtag... I would totally endorse checking this out now, because what happened when TikTok went down for those 12 hours and everybody was panicked and they started looking for other apps to go to so they could communicate, all of a sudden the world had opened up to Americans that were talking to those in China. And then the world started to talk because their algorithm was pretty much staying away from American feeds, and American feeds were staying away from global feeds. And hashtag World Talk is everybody talking about their own communities now and talking about their own politics and comparing their countries. And it is so interesting to watch over and over and over again.
Yeah. So it's interesting, as somebody who was born in the UK and would go back to visit a lot, news overseas is about the rest of the world. There's local news, but it's international. In America, it's very insular. We really only hear about major events overseas, but otherwise it's all local, local, local. So it's really cool to have World Talk where people are talking to each other and comparing those notes. And by the way, I tried Instagram Reels this weekend because I accidentally deleted TikTok off my phone. Woof. Oh my God.
Terrible.
Reels is terrible. I feel like I just like mainline pixie sticks watching it. Like, compared to TikTok, it's literally like going from an all veggie diet, which is saying something about TikTok, to just trash.
Yeah, what I love about it is, and you know, and I've said this when I come back from traveling, because that's the number one thing that I love to do, is that we're pretty much raised in this country as America, America, America. We do the best. We do the best. We do the best. And then when you start scrolling just a little bit about World Talk, you're going to start to realize, if you don't do any traveling, like, okay, maybe this country has it a little bit better than we do. Maybe they have a theory that we can apply here in America. And to watch everybody talk back and forth about the positives and the negatives that are going on in their own country, you really start to realize, like, it might be governments against governments, but the people are pretty much the same all around the world. And I've really enjoyed this weekend. So if you get a chance, just click on a couple of them and you'll start to get a feed that touches the rest of the world more than it does the United States. And just hashtag World Talk on TikTok.
The Bert Show. Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's the Bert Show's entertainment buzz.
You would hope that when a 30-second advertisement that comes on the TV that costs $8 million, you would hope it's going to knock it out of the park. And there were some pretty good Super Bowl commercials. I think they have kind of gotten worse over the years. I mean, for $8 million, I mean, it's the most expensive it's ever been ever in Super Bowl history. Get together, make something funny.
Here's the thing that was amazing me about the commercials this year, and this seemed to be the trend, is that if you are going to spend 30 seconds on a commercial and you are going to try to send me a message, I feel like 28, 29 seconds of it, I don't even know what the commercial is about until they show the logo at the end. And I'm like, is that a good way to market your product?
Oh my God. Yes. I had this conversation with my husband, Chad, last night because we were watching, I think it was like a Google ad or something like that. And it's a dad raising his daughter from being like a toddler through her going to college. And I'm like, okay. Heartstrings. And she leans back in with tears in her eyes when he's dropping her off at college. He's in the car, like red-rimmed eyes, tearing up. And she comes back and swoops in for a hug, and I'm like, that's sweet. And then the camera flashes and it's her as a toddler hugging him, and I lost it and I was like, damn you, Google.
You got me.
Chad said the point is that you can't even tell the products being advertised until the very end sometimes, but companies know that if they elicit a strong emotional response from you, you're more likely to remember their product. So that's why they go those heart-wrenching emotional response routes and not about the actual product.
Yeah, it started to become a game between Amanda and I. We were watching the commercials and trying to figure out what it was going to be before the logo came up.
So the only strong emotional response I wanted to have was, ha-ha, la funny. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was looking for with all of these commercials. So I feel like I picked out some of the top ones you should look out for maybe on YouTube later, because I do feel like Ben Affleck knocked it out of the park again with Dunkin' Donuts. He returned as one of the Dunkings, except there were different Dunkings this time around.
Jeremy Strong, you know what? I'm not a huge fan. He's a great actor. I'm not a huge fan of him like off screen, but you have to give it to him because he's known for being a method actor or being like over the top. And then what he did in the Dunkin' commercial, I'm like, that was well played.
And they were ripping on Starbucks pretty good.
Yeah, right? They were.
So the clip I'm about to play for you is a roast between a company that looks like it could be Starbucks. It wasn't exactly Starbucks.
Aww.
And then the Dunkings, where they're basically going back and forth trying to prove who was the better coffee shop.
This ain't the Dunkings. Where the hell are Matt and Tom?
Forget them suckers. Matt Damon and Tom Brady don't have the heart of a champion.
We got a new squad, Dunkings sequel.
Affleck's and Belichick.
Dunkings! Dunkings! About to get roasted!
Like a dark seasonal roast with coriander and slight balsamic drizzle.
Sounds like what's in my garbage disposal.
How much to wait a half hour to get my name spelled wrong in the cup?
Nobody wants a goat milk double half-calf soy milk cap. You could just brew it. It's beans and water.
Oh, damn.
America runs on Dunkin'.
It was good. It was a solid
one. You kind of have to watch it.
I missed that one. Yeah.
And I do love when companies are self-aware and they kind of let us know that we know, listen, I know you love Starbucks, but also like Dunkin' is way better. So I love seeing them kind of break the fourth wall with that. Also, we got a reunion from Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal. We kind of knew this was coming. They teased it on social media. They teamed up for a When Harry Met Sally scene all for Hellman's. They went back to Katz Deli in New York. They're sitting at that iconic table and Meg Ryan's character does elicit a response that brings Sydney Sweeney into the mix where she says, I'll have what she's having.
I can't believe they let us back in this place. There we go.
Oh my gosh.
Oh boy.
So good. It's so.
This one's real.
And
that is a sandwich. I'll have what she's having.
I have never seen white people get so excited about mayonnaise. this is a big day for them.
The only one that really stood out to me, funny-wise, was the Coors Light Monday commercial.
Oh, yeah, when they were like, you got a case of the Mondays. Yeah. They basically had all the slots. Yeah. And like, oh, if you're feeling sluggish, get a case of the Mondays, get a case of Coors.
Trying to catch his beer, but he's too slow.
Yes. Kanye West returned for another Super Bowl commercial. He got super high at the dentist and just put his iPhone in his face. He's like, I spent all the money on the commercial, so this is just me in the chair. That was fine. He said, go to Yeezy.com. But to me, I think the one that sealed the deal, the funniest of them all, in my opinion, because it was so delightfully random, was Mountain Dew teaming up with Seal, where they CGI'd him
that was hilarious.
On a seal, and Becky G comes up, and he's like, and she's like, what is happening?
So much as he can tell you, so much he can say. Ooh, remain my power, my pleasure, my faith.
Anybody who took something before watching that commercial, I think, is probably waking up today like, thank God I'm not crazy. What happened? What was in that I took?
Well, they said at the end of the commercial, this doesn't make any sense.
All right, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce are reacting to their devastating Super Bowl loss. I'm going to tell you who they're blaming for the L on your next E-Buzz on The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.